Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You're doing your friends and your loved ones a disservice in your life if you don't share the pain with them because they want to be there for you.
Had I probably just been more vocal about how I was feeling in a lot of moments, like growing up especially, it helps everybody understand you better and like can react to how you're reacting better.
The following podcast is a Dear Media production.
It's Violet Benson, your favorite meme queen and the big sis you didn't ask for, but need. Welcome to Almost Adulting.
Almost Adulting. Almost Adulting.
Are you ready?
Hi, besties, and welcome to a brand new Almost Adulting, the largest self-help podcast and movement, your number one destination for personal growth and mental health. I am your big sister and your host, Violetta. And today, my amazing special guest is Brooke Schofield, and she was born on November 26th. She's a Sag from Arizona. She's a YouTuber and a podcast host of the popular podcast called Canceled with her co-host, Tana. Okay, I always say Tana Mongeau, even though I know that's not her last name.
It's close. Mojo.
Oh. What's a hidden talent that you would say you have that no one knows about?
I can remember songs like so easy. Like I can hear a song one time and I can know all the words to the song, but I'm not good at remembering anything else.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
That is kind of a talent.
Yeah, that's the only hidden talent I have.
My hidden talent is that I'm surprisingly average at everything.
Okay.
So some people, yeah, so let me tell you how that's a talent.
Some people are really good
some
at very few things.
Are really good at very few things, or and they have their things that they're so bad at. I'm not bad at anything,
okay.
But I'm also not great at anything.
I'm exceptionally bad at like a lot of things, but I'm really not great at anything. So I'm average at some things.
Yeah, so I'm just kind of average at everything. Like anything I learn how to do, I can do it. I'll just be average.
That's a good quality to have.
Just not bad at anything.
Do you ever take it so far as to like try to really get good at it?
I try to be good at everything.
Oh.
So it just doesn't
I guess
work.
I do too. I'm just not very successful in it.
Yeah, I'm such a competitive person. Like I want to be the best at everything, but I'm just not, and I'm okay with it.
I didn't get that bone. I'm like not really very competitive.
You're not?
I don't know why.
Did you not grow up with siblings?
I did, but I didn't.
Are you a middle child?
I'm the youngest child.
And you're not competitive?
Mm-mm. But I was like, I didn't really grow up with my siblings like that, so I was pretty much an only child.
Oh, okay, got it.
So I guess I really didn't have anyone I was competing with. But I was a dancer, so I like. Probably you'd think I would be competitive, but I just wasn't, my head was not in the game.
Really?
I was more concerned about like boys or like.
I'm so competitive, but it's probably because my dad always made my sister and I competitive with each other. So we got used to, my sister was just always really good at everything.
Oh, that's the worst. I've had friends like that. Although like, I don't know. I just have never been competitive really with anyone. Maybe because I know that I couldn't win.
Yeah.
So I'm like, why bother?
That's me. Yeah, I don't really win. Okay. In your journey, what would you say some type of belief or value that you used to hold for a really long time and then maybe recently you reevaluated or changed that idea and something that like prompted that shift?
I feel like I was actually just thinking about, I grew up thinking like I had to be or have like a college education and stuff to be successful and that like it was better to have like a stable good like job that requires a degree than it was to like pursue something else. I just thought I had to go to college and graduate and get my degree and I didn't, and then I'm doing fine without it, so I feel like I don't feel that way anymore. And I'm hearing now that they're not even like a lot of jobs are not requiring it, like people can like I feel like it's we're gonna phase out of college pretty soon here.
Oh my god, don't say that. I hope everyone goes to college, but yeah, no.
Did you go to college?
Yeah, I have 2 degrees.
Oh, of course. You're brilliant.
Not really, but.
But I grew up thinking that was like the most important thing in the world. And like my grandparents were so adamant about it. And then.
I mean, yeah, I used to be an accountant. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh my God. I need help with my taxes. Seriously.
So I used to be an accountant. And that's one of my 2 degrees is in accounting.
Cool. What's your second one?
Business law.
Oh, wow. You're so smart.
But thank you. I should say that's one thing I think the women we need to stop doing, and maybe we should all stop doing this in 2024, which we deny compliments. It is a woman thing. Science research shows the women tend to accidentally go right away from what we've learned to be humble and feminine. It's so, oh my God, no, I'm not that great. And then, especially in the workplace, the research shows that if you keep saying, oh no, I'm not that great, no, people go, oh, they'll okay, yeah, you're you, right, yeah. Never mind. And then with men in the workplace, research shows that they always go based on their potential. So with women, it's more being humble. And with men, they're like, oh yeah, I'm killing it. I'm doing this, I'm doing that, I'm doing this. And then people go, oh, I want to be on that person's team.
Right.
So it's like, oh, you're so great. Thank you, obviously.
I try to be conscious about that. I'll always try and say like, oh, wow, like, thank you. Instead of, no, stop.
Yeah. So then you say, oh, that makes me feel so good. Thank you. Right. I appreciate that. You're right. Correct.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Absolutely. Okay, cool. Anyway, I like that. What would you say, something from recently that you heard, what's some piece of advice or wisdom that someone recently shared with you and it continues to resonate with you, bring into the new year?
I feel like I'm learning recently from like those around me who just care a lot. Like, I'm somebody who cares so much about like what other people think, as far as like I want people to think I'm nice and respectful and whatever, and like sometimes it's at the expense of myself. Like, I'll protect somebody online, or I like won't say things that people have done to me, or like even just in real life also, like, I want to make myself look like I'm just like nice and kind, but then I like am not being honest about situations. So I feel like people have been like, speak up,
yeah,
stick up for yourself, kind of thing. Like, especially honestly, mostly in my personal life, like, just like I have a hard time
speaking up
for myself, and I feel like I've been way better about that recently, and then it's translated online because I'm like, check this one out.
That's good. I'm proud of you. I'm happy that you're doing that. Well, I think that's important.
I'm trying.
That's a good wisdom, to speak up. So I was watching your vlog last week, and you talked about how one of the things you want to manifest for your year, it's a healthy relationship, and you emphasize the word healthy, because you said, normally I just try to manifest a relationship and I don't say the word healthy. So this year I want to differently. Elaborate what you meant by that.
I just think when you ask the universe for things, you need to be specific, because sometimes they'll send you exactly what you wanted, but you forgot to include what you didn't want, or like things you were trying to avoid.
Yeah.
I feel like I said it in the vlog, but I'm like, I keep manifesting like, oh, I want a relationship, and I'll get a relationship, and then it'll be like the worst relationship ever.
Have you had some bad experiences recently?
I have. Well, honestly, not recently. This last, like, 2023 was a good year because I didn't really, like, seriously date anyone. But my last relationship, like, real relationship, was about as bad as they come. So,
okay. So I did want to, obviously, you've talked about it enough, but to any of my listeners who haven't had the amazing opportunity of getting to know you yet until this podcast, or to any of your new listeners that we can refresh their memory, just briefly, I do want to dive quickly into your last relationship, which was around 2020 or 2021.
No, it was 2022, the end of 2022. It was a year, almost exactly a year ago.
Okay, Clinton, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. The end of 2022. And basically, your ex was just a pathological liar and lied to you from his accent to somebody in his family dying for sympathy.
Yeah, he had told me his mom, dad, and brother had all passed in the like year before, and he was from Australia, and he grew up super rich. Like, he just had this like extremely elaborate like storyline that just, none of it was true.
Were his mom, dad, and brother alive?
His mom and his brother are alive.
So you dated somebody that told you that his mom and his brother are dead?
Mm-hmm.
But they were just alive and well and doing great.
Yeah, and not like a one-off, like, oh, I said it once and I never talked about it again. It was like a constant theme of our life, or like of his life and our relationship, was like, ever since my mom died, or like, you remind me of my mom. Like, his mom was his entire personality, and her like having passed, and she's kicking, she's chilling, she's alive.
And then how was he able to just fake it? Because Australian accents are really hard to fake.
Like, well, he's not good at it, but I'm not the smartest.
Okay.
He's so bad at it. If you look back, I just archived all our videos together the other day, because I'm just like, I don't even want anybody who dates me from this point forward to be able to like see that. Because I'm like, what was I thinking? He did not have an Australian accent.
Can you mimic it?
Well, he would just, honestly, no. He's, it was like, he would say, like, I lived in the UK, so, like, I'm mixing him up. But, like, he grew up in Brunei, which I actually don't even know where Brunei is. But
I would, yeah, I would literally believe all of that, too.
But he is also Filipino. His mom, I don't even think, speaks English. So I'm like, he must also speak another language that he never told me about. So how scary is that?
That's so weird. That's something you would think he would actually, like, imagine, want to show,
like,
off.
If you were, like, in a relationship and you just didn't tell him that you spoke any other languages.
I think, but that was my sister. My sister lived half of her life in Israel. And I think one of her boyfriends is, I remember they were together for a year. And I was like, does he know you're from, like, you were born in Russia and you grew up in Israel? And she's like, well, I don't know. You just never asked.
Oh, it was such a man thing to do, is just never ask.
And I was like, that's literally half of your life.
That's, like, a really important detail. But that's my favorite detail about you, is that you speak so many languages. Oh, that's the coolest thing.
Thank you so much.
You know how smart you, well, of course you know how smart you have to be, but, like,
do you have to be really smart to speak
yes,
multiple languages?
Absolutely, I wouldn't, because you're so, like the way you present yourself and stuff in English is, like, you're so smart. So I can't imagine.
That's so
in,
funny,
like, your
you
first
say
or
that,
second language.
Because the way you present yourself, I really like. You come off so likable, and you have this trait about yourself. Even when I watched your TikTok videos, there's something about how you speak in your TikTok videos that makes you very watchable. And I don't know if it's because you lick your lips or what it is, which I know
I noticed
irritated by that, which that never bothered me. But your lips are really nice. So it's, I don't know how to explain, when I'm watching the video, I focus on your mouth area, and it's like, it's kind of like, okay, on TikTok, when that one girl that was doing those videos, like,
yeah,
and she got millions, hundreds of millions of views, and people really could not understand or fathom why that happened, is because there's certain faces, there's just something about them are easy to watch, and it brings you serotonin.
How interesting. I've never thought about that. So, I feel like it's just a tick of mine.
No, so then for you, when you speak, there's something about you that, because I don't like watching videos, like, in general, because part of my job is constantly looking for, like, funny videos and things like that to just work for me. Mm-hmm. But, like, with your videos, instead of swiping through a lot of times, most of the time I kind of stop and then I watch it because you're just interesting to watch.
Well, thank you.
So it's a really cool trait.
Thank you so much. I'm like, take that, all the people who hate on me for licking my lips. I can't help it. I found out, I had to look into it.
From,
like,
your medicine.
It is. But it's like I don't know if it's, like, dry mouth or what it is, but it's something, like, really common with the medication that I take that people,
whatever it is, report. It's because we're focusing on your mouth, because something about you is watchable. So it's a good, it's,
well,
a good
now
thing.
That people pointed it out to, I almost feel like I do it more, because now I'm like, you know, it's like when you feel like you have an itch.
Yeah. No, don't worry about whatever they're saying. You're doing just fine.
Thank you.
But you do come off very likable. I like that about you.
Well, thank you.
Okay, so let's move on past that one ex. I'm not even going to mention his name, mm-hmm. since you made it a point to say how you don't even want anyone you've ever dated to know about him. But after him, you did meet up. You got to know. You were like, I'm done with singers. How about a comedian?
Yeah, I should have been just done with the talent.
Yeah.
In general.
So then you ran into Matt Rife.
Yeah.
And you were like, this seems like a good idea. Would you say, is Matt Rife the one that got away?
No. I don't think so.
Okay.
What about you? Do you think so?
Well, okay, funny story. So Brooke and I actually, I got to watch the whole escapade with her and Matt, and the stuff happened. I normally keep everything to myself, including people I'm ever romantically interested in. But it seemed that I happened to fall in the same category that I thought Matt stopped talking. When Matt and I stopped talking, that's when him and Brooke started talking. But it turned out that we were actually also talking at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I don't get you.
Yeah. I definitely think Matt Rife was the one that got away from me.
You do?
No.
I feel really sorry for whoever ends up on that train.
Yeah. Okay. So in a parallel universe, obviously Matt Rife probably thinks that he is a catch, and he probably is the one that got away with every girl he's ever been with. So if you had a chance to leave him a Yelp review for dating him, what would be your star rating? And then what would be your brief but honest review of it?
This is hard because I feel like I felt one way about it when it ended and I feel completely differently about it now. It's like I went and wrote a review already for a product that was amazing and then it broke down the line.
Yeah.
Like, he was great at the time until I realized he was just a fraud. I'm like, what the fuck?
So at what point did you realize you dodged the bullet?
Very recently, honestly. When I started just realizing how many people were talking to him. But to be honest, I'm going to give him 5 stars for leaving me in the dust, honestly, because I'm so grateful for it.
Okay, so he left you.
Oh, fully.
Okay.
Fully. Let yeah. it be known.
Okay, got it.
Yeah.
I feel like I dodged the bullet because he couldn't make it to our second date. And then I was like, okay, bye. Then I'm not interested. And then I did feel bad at first.
Yeah.
Because we talked about it.
It's not like he just, like, dumped me out on the streets. I was trying to be better about, like I said, like, standing up for myself and, like, vocalizing when somebody's not treating me right. So I told him, I was like, this is not gonna cut it. Like, this amount of communication, like, I'm not happy with it how it is. And he basically just said, like, sorry, I can't get any better. Because he was spread too thin, let me tell you.
Yeah, he was really busy, not just with work, with 20 other girls.
He's the busiest man alive. He is the most impressive, most hardworking person I've ever heard of in life, knowing what he is able to accomplish in a day.
It was actually crazy when I reached out to Brooke and I finally told, because basically, I talked to him very briefly and it was during December of 2022. And then I could tell when him and Brooke started talking, I was like, oh, cool. And maybe they seem like a better match. But in the back of my head, I was like, ugh, did I go too hard on him? Blah, blah. And one of my friends was staying with me at the time. My friend was staying with me. She's from Portugal. And she was the one that was like, he's a loser.
Yeah, someone told me too, and I was like, I was so offended. I was like, oh my god, like, how dare you? He's so sweet.
Yeah, she thought he sucks, so she was like, get over it really fast. And then months later, whenever it broke out with you called him out and then like 20 other girls, I wasn't even aware of it, and she started sending me all that stuff to kind of validate, like, look, I was right, look at this. Yeah. Like, you could have been one of those 20-30 girls that he was dating at the same time. And I'm like, oh my gosh, you're right.
That was the 30 or 20 that was all in the headlines. That was not accurate. Although, I mean, it probably was close, but
whatever. Loads of girls.
It was like quite a few girls, and not all of us. Like, to be clear, it's not like he was like talking to 30 girls at a time, but like all of us had overlap with like at least a couple girls in the group.
Let me guess. Your medicine cabinet is crammed with stuff that just doesn't work for you. Maybe you're not sleeping. Maybe you're still hurt. Maybe you're stressed out. That's how it used to be for me. I got in a car accident around 10 years ago, and I still have disc fractures in my back, 2 of them. And I'm constantly in pain. And because my personality is so bubbly and outgoing and ADHD, I struggle with being able to go to sleep and turn it off. Until I was able to reset my health with CBD from CB Distillery. It's been such a change for me. I'm finally sleeping because I'm taking sleep more seriously this year. And thanks to them, I'm finally able to go back to sleeping at least 7 to 8 hours a night. CB Distillery's targeted formulations are made from the highest quality clean ingredients. There's no fluff, there's no fillers, it's just pure effective CBD solutions designed to help support your health. In 2 non-clinical surveys, 81% of customers experience more calm, 80% said CBD helped them with the pain after physical activity, I'm one of them, and an impressive 90% said that they slept better with CBD, I'm also part of that. So if you struggle with a health concern and you haven't found relief, then make the change that I did to CB Distillery. With over 2 million customers and a solid 100% money-back guarantee, CB Distillery is a source to trust. And right now, I have a 20% discount code to give you to get you started. So visit cbdistillery.com and use my code ADULTING for 20% off. That is cbdistillery.com using my code ADULTING. And I will also include that in the description bio of today's episode. And again, it's cbdistillery.com. A while back, I was having serious hair shedding issues, hair thinning issues because of stress, life itself, and also I used to have hair extensions, which is why I finally decided to take out my hair extensions, cut my hair, and just start from scratch. Part of my routine now is taking these Nutrafol supplements every single morning. I take 4 in the morning, and the last 6 months, I've seen so many different results with my hair. It's natural, it's 100% drug-free, and I've seen even a difference in my lashes, my eyebrows, and obviously, like I said, my hair. It's even helped me with sleeping, which has been pretty cool. Nutrafol is the number one dermatologist recommended hair growth supplement, with over 1 million people who are seeing thicker, stronger, faster growing hair with less shedding. You can basically go on their site and take their hair wellness quiz on Nutrafol.com for a personalized hair health plan that's based on your specific root causes. With Nutrafol, you can build a hair growth routine that's super simple. You purchase online, no prescription required, then they have free shipping and automated deliveries that ensure that you will never miss a day again, and you will see results in 3 to 6 months. How amazing is that? 86% of women, including myself, have reported seeing improved hair growth after taking Nutrafol's women's hair growth supplements for at least 6 months. So take the first step to visibly thicker, healthier hair. For a limited time right now, Nutrafol is offering my listeners $10 off of your first month subscription and free shipping when you go to Nutrafol.com and enter my promo code ADULTING. Find out why over 4,500 healthcare professionals and hairstylists recommend Nutrafol for healthier hair. Nutrafol.com, spelled Nutrafol.com, using my promo code ADULTING. Again, that is Nutrafol.com, promo code ADULTING. Take better care of your hair today. I'm only asking this in the way that somebody else can tell for the future with whatever guy they're dating. Like in the beginning, especially because dating someone like Matt, the reason I was interested in talking to him, not dating, like talking to him, was because I liked how much words of affirmation is one of my love languages. Mm-hmm. So the way he would talk to me in text, he was like, you're the only girl for me, blah, blah, blah. And I was just like, that makes sense. That checks out. Well,
I'm such an advocate for love bombing, because it just makes, like, how could you not feel that way about me? It's in, like, how I feel.
Right.
I'm like, of course. You're like.
So now looking back, it makes sense. Love bombing is one of the red flags. Looking back now, when you were seeing Matt, were there any red flags? And now you're like, oh. Like, for example, when he had to see his grandma or whatever, like, what were the red flags?
Oh, that wasn't me. That was another girl in the group. I don't know. I have a hard time with red flags. If I were to notice them, then I might be able to avoid them. But I never see them. Like, I don't see them the way that everybody else sees them. I truly thought, like, oh, this is the nicest guy. It should have been a red flag that, like, if that many girls, like, that many beautiful girls, like, are interested in a guy, you can safely assume that he's not only talking to one girl. Like,
I never assume that with any guy.
We should, though. Like,
but can't you just? Well, maybe I'm. Maybe it's
I thought different. I was different.
But the truth is, yes. From every single dating book that I read, that I give advice on, all jokes aside, of course, yes, you are not the exception with most guys. But there is one guy you are going to be the exception for.
Yeah, God, I hope
so. There is going to be that one guy that, regardless, because then what? You're supposed to only date like the most ogre-looking guy, because hopefully he has no options. So then he'll pick you. You want the guy who has plenty of options, but you're the only one he's paying attention to.
I actually just, someone else just told me that. And now that's going to be my new thing that somebody recently told me that I'm carrying with me.
Yeah.
Because, like, I don't know. I know it's true, and I shouldn't be so cynical about it, but I have to be, because it just keeps happening to me over and over again.
Maybe I think it's important to be more cautious. One thing that I've learned is that I don't have enough standards when I'm dating, because mm-hmm. it's more my side thing, and I'm so focused on work that my friendships and dating, it's more like whatever pops up, that's okay. Maybe I can mold them into what I'm looking for. And I've realized that's been my mistake, because the people I'm dating are not actually, because I'm not being more specific.
Yeah.
With what I'm looking for.
I had a hard time because I didn't really know necessarily what I was looking for. I'm doing it like reverse now, where I'm learning from each guy like what I'm not looking for. So like qualities that I've had in the last like few people I've dated that were just non-negotiable. Like I cannot have that in another like man moving forward. And like honestly, the Matt thing, not even that serious. It was such a blip, like a tiny little period of my life that like it didn't really even bother me. But I wasn't going to go down defending him online. I'm just saying.
Yeah, the Matt thing is not serious. I think that's where we're able to have this conversation, laugh about it. And that's why I just randomly divulged that I also used to talk to him, which, by the way, all we've ever done is kiss. We never did not do more than that. What a blessing. Thank the Lord for many reasons that that's all that happened. But every story in general does have a silver lining, which is the things you learn. So you said your silver lining is that you're learning everything you don't want. Mm-hmm. So what so far, based on not just Matt, but other people that you've dated, that you've learned what you don't want in a partner?
I hate to say it because I am such a fan of it, but love bombing, like, I love it in the moment, and it like you said, it makes sense and stuff, but I mean, no love bombing situation that I've ever been in has been a success story. So I'm
not
starting
yet.
To think like maybe that's the maybe that's yet. The common denominator. But like I've dated now guys who like maybe are just like more healthy about it, and like it's a little bit more like slowly onset, and it pains me because I'm like, God, he must not be that into me. But like that's a healthy.
Yeah, you're right. Because it's not real, because anything that burns off really fast dies off just as fast.
But the problem is I really am that into somebody that quickly.
Me too.
So,
but it's also that's also not real because you're into the fantasy.
Yeah, you're right, because you can't even know somebody that well exactly. In that amount of time.
That's when normally the first trait that pops up about them that you don't like, or let's say someone's so into you. Have you ever dated somebody that was so insanely into you? They're not even cheating on you or anything like that, but they're so into you, and then one day you do something that irritates them, whatever, and they can just move on, and they move on to someone else really quickly, and you're like, what the hell, I thought we had something. And it's because they build such a fantasy, and
you can just transfer it to somebody
exactly,
else.
Exactly, you're just their fairy tale, and that's why they haven't had a chance to actually get emotionally attached to you. That's why you do one wrong thing and they go, whoa, you're ruining my fantasy, someone else. And then that's why another girl just replaces you so quickly, and you're like, did we have nothing? And yeah, you guys had nothing.
God, I hate
it's
that.
It's crazy. I know. It makes me sad as well, but that's the truth.
I don't know. So yeah, I guess I would avoid love bombing. Like, so maybe on some level I like it, or just like you said, words of affirmation. Like, you don't have to be like a complete love bomber. I liked somebody to just give me some.
Yeah.
Like,
but I do agree. When it's slowly, then they probably really, really like you. When they if things like you're the girl for me or my wife or whatever, then yeah, like wait a little.
Yeah.
So I want to dive in, get to know more about you.
Okay.
Okay. So moving on from relationships, what would you say a pivotal life moment or experience that's happened in your life that's really, you would say, shaped the person that you are today, both personally and maybe even potentially professionally?
Honestly, just going to college. I know I just made this whole thing about how I did go to college.
Oh, so you did go to
yes.
college?
I don't know why I made such a thing of that. I literally did 3.5 years of college. I just didn't get a degree.
Okay.
I'm 6 credits away. But the actual, like, experience of going to college, like, all the time I spent and, like, the friends I made and stuff was, like, the most formative period of my life. Because I feel like socially I'd be, like, 6 years back had I not gone.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense. Some people really, it does help to be around, surrounded by people constantly mm-hmm. to kind of develop the personality.
Yeah, and I had always like had the same group of friends, and they were amazing friends, but I wasn't like out meeting new people all the time, so it was like a very different environment for me, and I feel like I learned so much from it. And I can tell now when I'm talking to somebody if they've not been to college or if they've not like had an experience like that, because I'm like, they're a little, it feels like they're a little like younger.
Can you tell with my personality?
No.
Okay, good. I mean, I went to Cal State, so it was just commuting. So I didn't get, I would say, the college experience.
I'm thinking more so my, like, younger friends. I do have a lot of friends that are, like, younger than me, like, 22.
Oh, okay, got it. That makes sense.
And you can, it just feels the way my friendships were out of high school kind of thing.
Yeah.
And not in a bad way, but just you can tell.
Well, it's also different because now a lot of people socialize on social media. So I would say the younger people don't have the same experience that we did, where we were kind of more forced to be in the streets.
Mm-hmm.
Door
to door.
Yeah, it's different a little now. Okay, so when I was watching your YouTube vlog last week, another thing that I've noticed that you mentioned, I found really interesting, and I wanted to kind of dive into it. You said it kind of in passing how year 2022 was a terribly low year for you, where you wanted to quote unquote exit Earth, to quote you.
Yeah.
So that really struck a chord with me, and I think I wanted to kind of elaborate on it more because I think a lot of people would be able to relate to that. So I was wondering if you mind kind of sharing one of your lowest moments from that year that made you feel that way, and then how you kind of overcame it.
So we had gone on like a break from the podcast at the end of that year, or like in the middle of the year. And I had immediately gotten into the relationship with like the liar that we were talking about. And so I'd lost like my job essentially. So I like really had nothing that I was
right,
doing.
Your podcast got canceled in that moment.
Yeah, it was like a break that we took, but it was like 7 months long where we just had no podcast at all. So
and
I
your
felt
relationship
like
ended.
It started.
Oh.
So I had lost like this like sense of purpose because I had nothing that I was really doing other than like making YouTube videos, which isn't very fulfilling. Like honestly. and I got into this relationship that was just a very unhealthy, like, toxic relationship. And so my, like, self-esteem, I feel like just throughout the relationship just got worse and worse and worse. So then when it was over, I was, like, just not well at all. And I was, like, at the time I was, like, not medicated, not taking anything for, like, any of my little mental situations. And it was just really bad news. But I had, I had a couple really good friends. I was, like, talking about them earlier. Like, my three that I go to. And I'm not kidding, they babysat me. Like, I had everybody taking shifts. Like, that sounds so bad, but I would have to have somebody with me all the time.
That doesn't sound bad at all. Because one thing when people go through a low period or darkness, loneliness and isolation are two of their best friends. And it's also the two worst things that you put yourself through, because during loneliness and isolation, your mind starts to play tricks on you by lying to you. So you start to believe that people love you less than they really do, which is why most people tend to not reach out to other people for help, because mm-hmm. you believe no one cares about me, no one loves me, so why would I ask for help? They'll laugh at me and things like that. And that's how people take it really much further. So that's interesting that you mentioned that, because one of my questions to you was going to be if you found potentially it difficult to express that you were going through a tough time or to articulate the words of how you were feeling. But you said that your friends were able to kind of read what you were going through.
Historically, like, I've been somebody always who, like, I'm never openly emotional, like, with my friends and stuff. If I'm going through it, I usually am very in, like, it's very, like, I keep it to myself. But this particular situation, it was scary to me because I felt so, like, out of my own head that I needed, like, I felt like it, like, I never even thought about not telling somebody because I was, like, scared. But yeah. I have borderline. So, like, emotions to me, like, it can be, like, the smallest emotion. And it feels, like, huge. So just that breakup, like, a regular breakup is horrible and hard. But, like, when there's, like, that amount of, like, deceit and lying and just, like.
But that's a really big thing. I mean, I hope that you understand that. That shows a lot of strength on your end because you were able to be so self-aware to process, like, wait, I'm genuinely not doing okay, that I can't keep it to myself anymore. Like, I have to reach out to someone. That's a lot of self-awareness for you to be able to do that.
Thank you. But I definitely had help. I had, like, one specific friend, and I, like, credit her for everything, because she sat me down and she, not kidding, she was online ordering my meds, like, doing, like, signing me up for therapy. Like, she was so good about it and helpful, and, like, that was when I, like, finally started kind of getting out of it. But it was just, like, not a good time.
I'm sure. So when people are going through lows or darkness, obviously the road to recovery is not a straight line. It's definitely mm-hmm. completely the opposite of it. But do you recall any specific moments during your lows where you felt a spark of happiness or positivity that gave you this hope that maybe you will be okay?
Yeah, I'm sure. Like, in the beginning, I'm not kidding, it was probably, like, 3 months of, like, just do, like, I just felt like my life was over. It sounds bad, but I was, like, grieving, like, I felt like my boyfriend died because it was, like, an imaginary person that I was dating.
That's how I do every single one of my breakups. It's probably because I'm a Scorpio.
Yeah,
I grieve.
Some people do, like, it though, like, death. Funeral and everything, but it really truly felt like he had died because he was not a real person. Like, I was, like, crying with him every night over his mom and, like, helping him through this, and, like, just everything I knew about him, it was just imaginary. So I was like, this was an imaginary relationship I was in. He literally died.
Yeah, and I'm sure it made you feel like you can't even trust yourself.
Yeah, and I felt that was, like, half the battle too, was just feeling so stupid. And I know now that, like, I couldn't have, that was, like, not my fault. But in the moment, I just was like, how the fuck did I let this happen to myself?
Yeah, I mean, they do say when it rains, it pours, and it's always in threes. Mm-hmm. Bad things when they come. So it makes sense. You know, you lost your sense of purpose with your job. And then, of course, the breakup happens, which is two. I don't know what the third one was, but yeah.
I hope it's not still coming.
No, it's done. You're done with that.
No, but I did. Yeah, there were, of course, like, little moments of hope and just, like, being around friends and stuff where I was like, okay, like, I can live without this lizard.
Did you have a memory of a specific point that felt like the turning point where you felt, okay, I can't do this on my own anymore. I need help, like, this is too overwhelming?
Honestly, just immediately when it happened, a lot of it I genuinely, like, don't even remember because I was so miserable. I was like, I'd make my mom sit on the phone with me for, like, 12 hours a day and just, like,
oh,
I don't know. But the second I started, because I've been on medication, like, most of my, like, since I was probably like 15 on. And it was only these past couple years that I hadn't been. So the second I got back on it, I was like, oh, shit. Like,
so when you were going through this, you were on medication before. And then during this period, you were not on medication.
Yeah, because when I moved to California, I didn't have like, or couldn't transfer my prescription or whatever. I just never went and refilled it. So I was like, I'm doing fine. I don't need it. And I really was for like several years.
What are you diagnosed with?
I have borderline personality and then just depression and anxiety, but
borderline personality
kind of all goes with borderline.
What is borderline personality disorder for those who don't know what that is?
It's comparable to like bipolar, but it's way quicker. It's like my emotions are not like major like manic episodes followed by like depressive episodes. It's very like at the drop of a dime, I can just feel like the sky is falling kind of thing. And I'm very, very reactive. A lot of people, for some people, it's like it's reflected in how they treat people. But a lot of people just like target it inward, and it can be like either like self-harm or like just, I mean, there's a million different ways that you can handle like the crazy overwhelming emotions. But it's basically just feeling an emotion
intensely, like, times
20 times like what a normal person should feel.
Yeah, I read that self-harm is very common with borderline personality disorder, but I've also read that borderline personality disorder and bipolar disorder is often, very often misdiagnosed for people, or people think they have, not regarding you, but I mean in general, that because it overlaps with ADHD, anxiety, depression. So how did you know exactly the symptoms that you have?
I didn't, honestly. And I...
The doctor there.
I first was like introduced to the idea when I was probably like 17, and my mom's bipolar, but my sister has borderline.
Got it.
And so, and it is hereditary, so I wasn't really like doubtful when I heard it the first time, but I had never had anything like that was so triggering to me that I felt like, because I'm emotional, but a lot of people are emotional. I was like, it could be my zodiac signs, or for all I know, like, but it wasn't until like really like that situation where I realized, like, because that was such a trigger, and it was like the way that I handled it was so abnormal and how I felt was so abnormal that I was like, okay, here it is. And then I just never had any doubts about it. But it is like a lot of them do overlap. There's like ADHD especially, like,
yeah, I think I only said it because the doctors when I was younger tried to diagnose me with bipolar disorder, and I completely disagreed with it. And then
I get that. I rejected mine originally. I'm like, no, not me.
And then they moved to ADHD because of it's the really impulses common. And things like that. Like the impulses and our reactions and things like that. It doesn't, like, our front lobes just process things differently. I used to offend people. People would start crying. And then next thing I go, wait, what just happened? I'll be really confused because I don't understand what's going on. But I've gotten better, obviously, I think, as an adult in general, but my medication helps me.
Yeah, it is hard to, like, I could be wrong. Like, there's no way really truly to know. But for me, I saw it in other people and didn't necessarily like agree with, like, I know a lot of people who also have borderline who it looks so different in them.
Kind totally. Of so you were not on that medication and then you sunk really low. Did you feel a sense of relief when you realized? Because for me, when I'm really upset about something, it's harder for me, even going through depression, which I have in the past, it's hard for me when you feel all this pain and you can't attach it to anything. But then when you realize, oh, I can attach it to this and I can get better, I feel better. So did you feel a sense of relief when you got your medication finally again and you saw a flip, like a change?
Absolutely. It was literally like night and day. And like, I know so many people who like are either like hesitant to take medication. It's obviously not for everybody, but it is for me. Like,
if something can help you, I don't care what other people say, you should take it for yourself if it helps you.
Well, when I'd initially, like in high school, when I'd first started it, my dad told me, he's like, Brooke, it's like being diabetic and saying like, no, I don't want to take insulin. Like, that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
And so once he put it like that, I was like, okay, fine. And it helped me so much then. And like, there were, I mean, I'm sure if ever I get like to where I'm really stable again, I could probably go off of it, but I'm safe where I am right now. I'm like, I'll take it forever.
Do you see a change in your personality or how you react to things now that you're back on medication?
Yeah, for sure. Well, I just feel like I can, I have more like clarity when I think about things, because I mean, what the medication I'm talking about isn't even, it's not like specifically to treat like borderline or anything. It's just an antidepressant. But like when, because I'm so reactive and because I'm like, everything is so huge to me, I can't like rationally think or make decisions and stuff when I'm feeling like sad. So to just not feel sad helps me like clearly decide like, this is right to do, this is wrong to do.
So one of your first steps to getting better was obviously getting back on medication to take care of your mental health. What would you say some of your other steps were in order to finally, to slowly get out of that darkness for anyone out there that's listening, that's currently going through darkness?
I feel like being around friends, I, as is true in most like emotionally abusive or like toxic relationships, I had completely like separated myself from my friends. I had not seen any of them in months. I was like not spending any time with friends at all. So then I felt like I had nothing to fall back on when it was like over. And of course all my friends were so amazing when it was like when we broke up. Aww. And like welcomed me back and stuff, but like that helped because I was like, God, I felt like nobody was there. And so I don't know, as soon as I started hanging out with friends again, going out, doing things, it was like a good season too, because it was like all of a sudden it was, I mean, it was like this time of year, so like,
oh,
it felt like spring was coming and I was like, okay, like it's getting better.
I guess I would ask you two questions for that. One, what advice would you give anyone listening out there that's currently going through darkness? How can they get better?
I feel like it helps to just know that it's not obviously going to be like that forever. I have such an issue with like emotional permanence. Like I can never imagine feeling any differently than I feel in that like immediate moment. Like right now I'm so happy and I can't imagine, I can't even really like put myself in that place anymore. And so it's hard for me in the opposite, like when I am like so low, to imagine being happy again, but then you are.
Yeah, so it's crazy. Just,
like, understanding it literally will be over.
Yeah, it is so crazy when you feel really bad. And it's crazy though, because when it comes to happiness, we know and believe that it's fleeing to the point that we sometimes don't even celebrate the happy moments in that moment. We're like, whatever, it's not that meaningful. You know, but then when it comes to, for some reason, sadness or anger, we're like, this is how I will feel for the rest of my life. It will never get better.
It's just like being sick or like being really in pain. It's like you're never sitting here actively thinking like, oh, I don't have a headache right now. But like,
yeah,
you're not appreciating like, oh, my God, I feel like I'm not sick right now. You're never going to feel that way.
I don't have a migraine now.
But
like,
it's,
I don't.
Yeah, but it's the same. It's the same thing. Like, I don't know. But I struggle with it even still, because when I do like have like really bad weeks or whatever, I'm like, God, like this will never get better. But I'm like, yes, it will. So just know, I guess that's my advice. Know that it does get better. And that's so like dumb. Just, I feel like I hear everyone say that, but like,
it's true.
It does.
I agree. It's crazy when you end up somehow looking back, like now how you're looking back, because when you talked in your vlog how you were so thankful for 2023. And then you mentioned, well, the reason is because 2022 was so low for me that I ended up being thankful for last year. But it's so true. Those moments when you look back and you, all these moments that you thought you were never going to get through, it just, things just change and you're doing okay again. I think that's so awesome.
Thank you. I'm like, I also just too think like, I'm such a believer in like things go really, really horribly before they're about to go really, really well. And like, historically, that's always how it's been. Like, that was like the worst, most horrible, like terrible period of my life right before like the most like success I'd ever had and like most happiness I'd ever had.
One thing that I've learned when I've gone through moments where everything felt like it's the worst right now, because you're not verbalizing it, you're just, it's in all in your thoughts, is that if you sat down and you actually logically thought it through, is this the worst? How can I fix this? What are my solutions? What are my outcomes from this? Because you're like, it's the end of the world. I'm going to die, blah, blah. But then you're like, okay, am I actually going to die from this situation? Yeah. So, because for example, when I first bought my house 3-4 years ago, I made such a big decision really quickly, impulsively. ADHD, I guess. I was on medication. Super impulsively. And then within a month or two, because no one tells you about the cost of buying. It was like just $100,000 just to spend into my, all the signing contracts, everything.
I remember you talking about this maybe on your podcast or something.
You're so fun that you just remember things that I say. Thank you. Yeah, so no one told me about all these extra things. And here I am suddenly looking at my bank account. I remember
Because I'm not a saver. So everything I put in, I was just a very fortunate year for me. And I used whatever checks I got paid to put a down payment on this house. And then I spent all the signing, all that. And then I looked at my bank account. And I kid you not, I have $3,000 in my bank account. And my mortgage was $10,000 for the following month. And I sat and I looked at my bank account. Because it takes, with our jobs, it takes around 3 months to roll money to come in from a job that you book.
Yeah.
That you did. So I looked and I said, I stopped eating. Like, I remember I lost weight for a couple of weeks because I was just like stressed out and I wanted to just kill myself. And I'm like, this is the biggest mistake I've ever made. I can't believe I bought this house. It brings me nothing but trouble. And then I suddenly just sat down. I was like, okay, is it the end of the world? No. What can I do from this? Okay, I can sell my house. I can rent out my house and move in with my sister. I can get a roommate. And then suddenly when I...
Yeah, there really are so many solutions. Exactly. But it's hard. It's hard because I'm like, sometimes I just can't think rationally. Like, bold of you to assume I could ever just sit down and lay it out. Like,
well, once I did that, I was like, oh, okay. I actually do have options. I said, or I can do what I did in the beginning where I'm just going to create a whole marketing plan, reach out to 100 brands. And there's going to be a small percentage, maybe a 5% chance, one of them will answer and I'll get a job that can pay me ahead of, in advance. And that's what happened. I said, can you guys pay me in advance?
I'm big on that because I struggled with that so many. I'm not a saver either. And like so much in the beginning of my career, especially like the whole like 3 month turnaround thing, like, oh my God, it was horrible. I was overdrawing my account all the time because I was like spending money that was imaginary.
Yeah, I remember I seen that in your videos.
Yeah. And like, I really struggled with that. Now I'm a lot better at saving money, but like, God.
Yeah, I'm getting
I won't even do a job now that if it's not like 30-day net. I will never take a 90-day net job ever.
I know. I need to be more specific with that. I do get annoyed even when they say it's 45-day net. And I'm like,
oh. Yeah. Now. It's nice though because it's like so long as you don't spend it like you have it. I was spending it like I had it. And I'm like.
I just didn't understand the cost. But yeah, I ended up getting money in advance. And then I was able to continued this house, but it was such a big difference between just not being able to eat, not sleeping. I looked like I was 50. I was just so stressed out and I was too scared to tell anyone, my family, for them not to worry about me. So I'm just holding all it in, like no one's experiencing the pain with me because I don't want anyone to know, to worry for me. So I'm just, you know, wit's end. And then once I sat down, I said, okay, so I could sell the house, I could rent it, I could get a roommate. I could get another job. Oh, okay. And then I was fine. It's awesome.
Right. It's just, it's hard when the sky is actively falling.
Yeah, but I guess I can be kind of internally dramatic sometimes.
Yeah, well, that's normal, I think.
What would you say is something that a lot of people don't realize about people that have borderline personality disorder?
I think a lot of people just assume, because there's like, you know, people talk about like splitting and like going really like crazy on people like around you and stuff like that. And it's not that way for like a lot of people, or like me anyway. Of course, I have like, I'm pretty reactive sometimes and like I might like go off on somebody. But most of my like the way that I like react is inward. So I like will be super compulsive. I'll like spend a lot of money, or I will stop eating for however many days. Like it's like weird, like self-harm behaviors like that I literally can't control, and as opposed to like hitting one of my friends, which I feel like a lot of people think like borderline and bipolar people think are like really aggressive. Maybe they don't, but that's what I thought. Well, like that's why I thought that can't
Pete
be me.
Davidson, I think, has borderline personality disorder, right?
A lot of people, yeah. And like my sister's like a little bit more like violent. Not violent, but like that was how she, like the way I saw it in her. So I was like, that cannot be me.
Oh.
And I didn't realize that like it doesn't always show that way.
So part of being a super smart businesswoman is to make super amazing, really good decisions at all times. And obviously, although 50% of the time I'm still making regrettable decisions, I've decided for 2024, there's going to be at least one good decision I'll be making, and that is partnering with EveryPlate. So if you're looking for a better budget for your food expenses this year, I have your back. You can get more bang for your buy with America's best value meal kit out there. Every plate is 25% cheaper than grocery shopping and 50% cheaper than your average fast casual meal. They have no hidden fees, so you can count on a great value week after week after week. Plus, you only pay for what you need with their pre-portioned ingredients.
They plan the meals, and then they deliver the pre-portioned ingredients right to your door. They are the easiest way to eat affordably. I mean, that is literally why I chose them. Aside from the fact that they also have these 15-minute or less dinners, which is the second reason I chose them, because I get bored so easily. I don't like to cook, but they don't make it feel like work. And then I'm eating, I'm full, and I'm happy, and I feel like a grown-up. And also, their meal kits are so well-known for such a low price. That is one of the main reasons what sets every plate apart from any other meal service. And with every plate, they provide plenty of delicious varieties so you never get stuck in some cooking rut. They have 26 tasty and affordable recipes that change every single week, including their 15 minutes or less dinners and their dinner to lunch dishes. It's easy to find something flavorful and satisfying for every single meal of the day. Plus, you can add even more delicious options to your order with up to 22 convenient sides, lunches, snacks, desserts. Should I go on? I mean, it sounds already amazing, okay? So get a meal for just $1.49 plus $1 steaks for life by going to everyplate.com/podcast and entering my code 49adulting. Subscription must be active to qualify and redeem that one steak dollar. Again, you can get a meal for $1.49, you heard me right, plus $1 steaks for life by going to everyplate.com/podcast and entering my code 49adulting. Subscription must be active to qualify and redeem the $1 steak. Take better care of your meal plan and your food and your budget. You're welcome. So then with medication, obviously now it's more controlled. What does a day-to-day in your life looks like with borderline personality disorder with taking your depression medication? Do you ever have experienced episodes while you're still on the medication, or is that kind of not
happening? I mean, it's just like some people need like mood stabilizers. I've never even tried a mood stabilizer because to me, I don't think mine is so bad that I need it yet. I hope it never is. But I still have like really intense emotions, but I can manage them now. And like in a daily in my daily life, I'm not like triggered really by anything crazy. If something were to happen again, like a extreme line, like relationship and stuff, it might be different. But I haven't had anything since then to like really set me off that way.
So what advice would you have for someone out there that's currently listening that is potentially feels maybe shame around having some type of, whether it's borderline disorder or bipolar disorder, anything like that, where they're currently not medicated or they feel like there's something wrong with them if they take the medication? What advice do you have to tell them about that?
I mean, obviously, if you don't want to take medication, don't. But it helps so many people. And like, it's the least shameful thing in the world. I feel like there's not a person that I can name off the top of my head who doesn't have something. You know what I mean? Like,
that's
whether
really
it be
true.
Like depression or anxiety, or it's so common. And it's as simple as like having a cold. It's just like, you get sick.
I agree. I think I've been diagnosed with ADHD and other things since I was a child, and I've always just refused to take any of that. And then I got lucky in a way when I was an accountant and one of my managers recommended that I get a medication to calm my personality down, which, trust me, HR got involved, so it wasn't they weren't smart about that. But I just always thought that if I got medication, then I admitted defeat, that there's something wrong with me. But in reality,
a lot of people feel that way.
Exactly. But in reality, I wasn't being myself. My emotions were so, sometimes I would just hide my emotions because they were so overwhelming for me. Mm-hmm. So it was crazy when I got on medication and I was like, but what if it takes away my personality? And it's like, is my personality right now like wanting to key my boyfriend's car? Like, is that really my personality?
Who knows?
What if it
takes
like
away my sparkle?
Yeah, it was taking away my spark. And then suddenly, it was so crazy when I got prescribed my Adderall. And it's like everything around me just calmed down. Mm-hmm. And even helped with my anxiety, whatever anxiety I had. With any depression, my emotions before were so extreme, and now,
well, because a lot of that, sorry, keep going.
Yeah, no, go ahead.
I don't know if you know Madeline Argy, but she has like such a good she talks about this a lot, but like so much of those like symptoms, like anxiety, depression and stuff, are just due to not being able to accomplish the things that you might like normally do, especially in people with ADHD.
Yeah.
Like I've been diagnosed with ADHD. That's another one I kind of like reject. I don't know why. Again, it's like a Venn diagram.
No, fair,
because like,
I said
overlap.
I rejected bipolar. Yeah. So I just chose to go with ADHD, and you chose with borderline disorder.
They That's do fine. All just like kind of overlap. But like I feel like a lot of those things could be just completely avoided if you targeted the actual issue, which probably exactly. is your ADHD.
I would hope, hopefully, but it helped me. It was crazy. It felt like I could see again. Mm-hmm. I don't know how to explain it, but suddenly I had 20/20 vision and people were speaking to me. Well, first of all, in high school, I used to just fall asleep constantly. Forget that part. It was more also my emotions. And suddenly I could just process things more like a normal person. Because right. before I always thought there was something wrong with me. And it's just crazy that I rejected having medication for so many years when in reality it could have made my life so much easier.
Yeah, I think you just got to think about you over everybody else. Because like I understand that not wanting to do it and like not wanting to like accept defeat or whatever it is. Like, but I was so desperate to just feel better that I was like, I don't care. I'll do anything. If you like, especially in that moment when I was like panicking that bad, I'm like, you could have told me like cut off both of your arms and it'll be over and I would have done it.
Yeah. But I think a lot of us would. That's like self-harm. So a lot of us would actually go
right.
to self-harm to stop the emotional pain.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I don't recommend that at all.
Yeah. Don't cut off both arms.
Try meds first for sure.
So one thing that I've realized the past year when I was right now, because I'm writing for a writing project that I have. So I have to revisit some of my old memories that are not the happiest. So one thing that I realized when I was revisiting some of my worst moments, I learned a big lesson that where I wish that I would have realized back then that I had people in my life who loved me, who would cry with me through the bad times. And back then I didn't realize it, which made me feel so alone. And I think that is kind of my advice now for anyone out there that's listening, which is you're doing your friends and your loved ones a disservice in your life if you don't share the pain with them, because they want to be there for you. And that's something I just didn't realize until even my recent years. So do you kind of have a life lesson or some type of lesson that you think will be helpful to anyone listening?
First of all, I really agree with what you're saying, because I'm like, had I probably just been more vocal about how I was feeling in a lot of moments, like growing up especially, first of all, it helps everybody understand you better and like can react to how you're reacting better. So that one's just like,
it's crazy. It also makes people feel closer to you, which I never understood that. But even with my therapist, I finally shared a personal moment. Even my therapist goes, thank you so much, I feel closer to you. And I'm like, what?
That's why I struggle with therapy though, because like just I had like a my, you know, my parents were drug addicts and stuff, and like I just had like a kind of shitty like not you laughing at
my parents. No, because the way you're just saying, yeah, my parents were like drug addicts.
I had things that like obviously upset me as a like kid and growing up and stuff that I never would talk about, because I felt like it was like I didn't want people to pity me, or I didn't want people to like think I wanted them to feel bad for me. And that was never, of course, what it was, but like there were so many things I probably should have spoken up about and didn't, for fear of like being pitied or like people thinking like,
yes, I agree. I used to be so scared. God forbid, people are going to view me as a victim. So I thought it was so much stronger for never speaking up. I growing up as a child, when I was get bullied, and I'm talking about bullied, when I was leaving my middle school, no one would speak to me because we won the green card lottery, and the people in my grade were upset at me for, because it was a big dream, a big American dream. Like to move to America was a really big deal back then. So people, like the popular kids who used to be my friends at the time, would like throw things at me anywhere I went, and like no one was allowed to speak to me, and it was really bad, and I just would not cry because I didn't want my parents to stress over me, you know, because I'm like,
yeah, you don't want to burden anyone.
Exactly. And I stopped showing up to school the last month, and I would just hang out on the grass for 8 hours every day. I'd be like, bye mom, I'm going to school, and I didn't.
Wow.
And again, I God forbid, like I told her, and like looking back now, I was thinking, because that's why I remember my parents were speaking to my sister and I recently, and they said how they still worry about me to this day, my sister and I both. And they said, when you have kids, you'll understand that it doesn't matter how old you are, you will always worry about your children.
Right.
You always think about them. And I said, that's when I realized, wow, I wish I knew that my parents were still worrying about me when I was younger, because I wish I would have talked to them, because I thought I was so strong not sharing it. And in reality, I was made me really weak for not.
I think, I hope at least, like, kids and stuff now, it's such, like, way more an open conversation, like, mental health and stuff in general. So I feel like kids might be more inclined to, like, speak up when things are bothering them and stuff. But I feel like, yeah, like, when we were growing up, I was, like, ashamed. And I was, like, I felt like I had a secret.
Yeah, and I think I was just really embarrassed, because I was, like, what if my parents think I'm a loser? That's so embarrassing.
No.
Well, I think it's also my personality is so bubbly. So then it was embarrassing to admit that
I'm not as outspoken as you. That's actually the reason I'm so outspoken now. It's because growing up, I just would, when things would happen to me, I just let it happen. I would just freeze and I would just allow it, which pissed a lot of kids off because I have no reactions. You like throw things at me, you try to hit me, I'm just standing there.
Right.
But now that's why I'm so outspoken, because I don't want that to ever be me again.
Well, that's great. I'm like, see, stick up for yourself. That's the lesson.
Yeah,
we
speak
learned.
Up.
That's what I was trying to get at earlier. I'm like, speak up, like, for yourself. I'll still struggle with it, obviously.
Do you feel like you are way more open then, again, I guess, with your fear of feeling like a victim? That is a really big deal, by the way, to grow up with two drug addict parents. That's definitely really traumatizing. Well, and I don't feel sorry for you. I'm just expressing.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I definitely am way more. I mean, I talk all the time now about like mental health and stuff, whereas I never would have done that growing up. But I also didn't really understand like even what was going on. Like I thought I didn't understand what anxiety was growing up or anything. I thought that I just felt super guilty all the time, like because that's the only like emotion that I really like knew about and could attach to it.
Why were you feeling guilty?
I don't know. Well, now I look back on it and I'm like, I had anxiety. But like in my head, I was like, I felt like I had done something wrong.
And, like, why were you feeling like you did something wrong?
I don't know. I didn't know. That's why I know it wasn't actual guilt.
Oh, you thought you were feeling guilt, like you were doing something wrong for feeling any emotions about.
Well, just in general, I had like probably like just general like panic or like anxiety or whatever it was. And I just all the time I felt like, oh my God, I've done something terrible. And I couldn't tell anyone because it was like it was my secret.
Are you close to both of your parents?
Not really. I grew up with my grandparents. So.
Okay. Yeah. I recall that I've seen videos of you kind of speaking about that, but do you touch on that a lot, or is it kind of just in passing?
I talk more honestly about my parents because I have a relationship with both of them now, but it's more like so like a friendship, not like they're not my friends, like of course they're still my mom and dad, but like it's like an adult relationship. I never really had like a mother-daughter relationship, or like I don't know, like
so
a typical. Anyway,
you grew up with your grandparents, and but you knew they were your grandparents, you know, because some people always talk about my aunt was actually my mother and they find out.
Because I was with my grandparents from when I was 10 on. So I was with my parents or my mom before then.
So are your parents still together?
No.
Well, until 10, they were together?
No. I like my dad was like in and out and like around, but it was mostly like my mom.
Got it. So and how many siblings do you have?
I have two sisters, one brother.
All from the same parents?
No two kids have the same two parents. Three different dads, two moms.
Okay. Three different dads, two moms. That's Arizona. I'm just kidding.
It is. It literally is.
I'm kidding. May I ask, when you say both of your parents were drug addicts, what kind of drug addicts?
When I was growing up, it was crystal meth. And then when I was like off with my grandparents, it was heroin.
Wow.
Which I feel like those two are like so different. I'm like, how did we switch? I don't really know. I don't really know how it works.
Obviously, when you're really young, you can't tell behaviors yet. So was there a specific moment where you can tell that one of your parents was using?
Oh, I could tell. I mean, I had an older sister too. So like I knew what was going on, and I knew obviously that was like what was going on wasn't normal, because my mom would sleep. She would sleep for like days at a time, or she would just like leave for days at a time, and we were like, I was six. So I knew it wasn't normal, and I knew it was like bad, but I also kind of just thought like everybody's families like had that, like had bad things like that, because like my cousins of course like went through it and stuff too, and so I just thought it was normal until I got out of it, and then I was like, wait a second.
What brought that change of at 10 years old moving in with your grandparents?
I went for the weekend and I never got picked up. I literally like my mom, I think she probably went to jail or something, like either rehab or jail, where I like had to go stay with my grandparents, and then I just never came back. But it was like a conscious choice. I probably could have if I wanted to, but
your grandparents just never told you you need to leave. You just kept staying there. Were you living there with your other siblings, or was it you specifically?
My sister had come in the beginning, and then she ended up moving back in with her dad in like another city. So then it was just me. It was like, it was 2 hours away with them. My grandparents were. And so I went, and then everyone else stayed in Tucson.
Got it. Did your grandparents ever talk to you about what was going on with your parents, or were you guys just kind of?
I knew. I was like, I would definitely was very aware of it. Like I mean, and it was still very much part of my life after that, because obviously I'd still, like, my mom was still, like, struggling with it and stuff, and I still would go down to see her and everything, but we didn't, it wasn't like a conversation with me and my grandparents. It was kind of just like, oh.
Okay, so you went for the weekend, and then you just moved in, and then it just was apparent that you're living there. So then after that, did you want to go visit your parents, or no? It was more forced, suddenly your mom wants to see you, so you have to go see her?
Yeah, I mean, I feel horrible to say that, because I love my mom. I love her, like, so much, but I did not want to go.
Right. When you were young.
I just never wanted to go back to Tucson in general, because it was, like, it reminded me of that, like, then, you know what I mean? And I was like, oh, now I have this, like, super peaceful, like, sedentary life. Like, it was just no conflict. My grandparents never fought, never raised their voices. Like,
Oh, right.
So much, like, it was just so much a healthier, like, household that I was like, I never, ever want to be around them again, which is horrible. And now I don't feel that way, but I did then.
Right, the guilt. I see. Yeah. I can actually really relate to that. The stuff that I'm writing, I have to talk about in my writing about the not great relationship that I had growing up with my dad. And I feel the same way because now we have such a good relationship, or what I consider good. Obviously, everyone has different definitions of good. And I feel shame when I bring up anything from the past, because I'm like, well, we're not like that anymore. So why even have to include this here? But it is still part of your experience, part of your growth.
Yeah, I feel bad because, like, to be honest about it, like, I have to say it, but my mom watches my stuff, and she's so, like, proud of it and stuff. So, like, I know it hurts her feelings if I say it, but.
Watching your parents firsthand with such hard drugs, did that kind of give you a specific outlook towards drugs, where either you want them, or the other way, which you don't want them?
I just was never that. I never was interested in that lifestyle. Of course, I've, like, you know, I had a whole party phase, and I've, like, dabbled, like, tried drugs just like every, like, teenager and stuff. But yeah, no, that was never appealing to me at all. Like, just the lifestyle of it all. Like,
at what point did you decide to kind of mend your relationship with your mother and to kind of work on a better friendship?
Of course, I've had, like, a relationship with them, you know, like, I would call them and stuff, but it wasn't until, like, this last year when I was really going through it that I, like, felt like I really understood my mom, because I was so far out of my mind and everything felt so far out of my control that I, like, sympathized with her, because I was like, oh, my God,
wait,
that must be.
Your mother has, you said, bipolar.
Yeah.
Oh.
Badly. So, like, when I was going through it, she helped me so much because she understood it, and it was easy to, like, understand her better once I'd, like, actually experienced it.
Was that the first time that you felt like you needed your mom and she actually came through?
Yeah, and she was amazing. She, like, literally, like, single-handedly got me through that. Like, she would talk to me for 12 hours at a time, like, and she understood. Like, if I were to, of course, there were a lot of people I could talk to about it, but it helped so much to have somebody who, like, literally knew how off, like, far out of my mind I was, you know what I mean?
Right, because someone else would be like, okay, you're overreacting, blah, blah, but she got it, the emotions, the extreme of them.
And it was really, it just was helpful, and it helped me, like, have empathy for her, because I was like, God, I know she doesn't want to feel this way.
And then with your father, do you have a good relationship with him?
Yeah, I do. Him I see a lot more. Like, I just saw him for Christmas, because he lives with my grandparents. He helps take care of my grandparents now, so.
Oh, is he sober?
Yeah.
How long has he been sober for?
He was good at it. He just got sober and
he's good at it.
He literally, like, I don't think he ever even really wanted to be on drugs to begin with, but he's been sober, like, probably 10-15 years as far as I know.
Do you think growing up in that type of household and environment kind of shaped who you are as a person?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, but also, like, I don't know, I got out of it. My, like, sister, for example, I told you she went back with her dad. She never really got out of that circle. And so her life, like, trajectory just turned out so differently than mine did. So I feel like I was more shaped by, like, my time with my grandparents than that.
Wow.
Does that make sense?
No, that does make sense. That kind of helped you probably be where you're at now.
Oh, yeah.
By getting out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever feel guilty about the fact that your sister didn't have the same experience?
Oh, yeah. I feel like she understands and, like, she doesn't, like, feel any type of way about it. But I felt bad for a long time, because I was like, that just sucks. But she was older, so it just wasn't the same situation.
How do you deal with guilt, with allowing yourself to remove it? Like, what do you do when you feel that guilt in anything, not just specifically with that?
I don't know. I
just let it live inside of you.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. That's probably where like half my anxiety comes from.
First of all, thank you so much for sharing that with me. And I feel guilty right now because when you were sharing everything, I really wanted to pay attention. But then I was so nervous that my face was doing that thing where you said, I don't want people to pity me. And my face was like,
No. I don't feel that way now at all. Good. That was like a thing that I've had growing up.
Well, I'm honestly really amazed by your upbringing. And that's, I think it's really cool how you turned out.
Well, thank you.
Is there anything you feel like I didn't ask you that I should have asked you?
I don't think so. I thought you asked such good questions. I've never really talked about any of that either online. So
oh,
that's
really?
Like, kind of cool.
Oh, that makes me really happy. I was aware of your upbringing, but I think hearing you say out loud to me really threw me off to the point that I'm just so amazed of who you are as a person based on your upbringing. Because, you know, many people, they choose different paths in life. They can be a really bitter and angry person if they have a really bad upbringing, versus they can be a beacon of light and happiness and still have hope. And, you know, they get to choose the path they go on. I've seen that with both of my parents, where my mother, really bad upbringing, the best human I've ever met. My father had a bad upbringing. Took him a while to become a softer person. Mm-hmm. So it's really beautiful to hear where you came from and the fact that you as a human still chose to be this soft and sweet, caring person.
Well, thank you. I try. I feel like my grandparents were good for that. They were like, they're just amazing. So
it also now makes more sense, the people you've dated in the past and why you're drawn to specific personalities.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
But I think it is so beautiful that you were able to reconnect with your mother. And I think it was really, hopefully she feels that pride and happiness that there was that moment that she was finally able to give you like that advice and the shoulder to cry on when she wasn't able to do it. Because people, you know, people are so quick to judge sometimes when it comes to people who deal with substance abuse, and they don't realize it's a real disease. And it's even worse when a lot of them have mental health issues, like, you know, with your mother with bipolar disorder, and they don't realize what goes, the pain that those people go through, and how, and the pain that everyone around them goes through. So I think it's really beautiful the fact that your mother was able to be there for you during one of your lowest moments, and now you guys get to connect. That's amazing. You're so lucky.
I think so too. And honestly, I'm grateful for it, just to be able to I know now what she goes through, and I can take that into consideration every time I think about anything about her, whereas before I might have resented her a little.
Right, which is nothing wrong with that. I was like that with my father for our own reasons. But yeah, I think it's cool when you get older and you kind of realize that you're hitting the age that your parents were at when they first had you.
Yeah, and you're like, they're just like us. And I love when people say like the your parents are also going through life for the first time.
It's
like
crazy. Yeah, you don't realize that, but it's true, because they were doing their best and they just didn't know any better. And I think it's really hard sometimes to be the bigger person as the child, because eventually you have to be the parent or the adult.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's such a, I just saw a whole video about that, like the shift where you realize like all of a sudden you're switching roles, kind of like. It is really interesting, but
yeah, but it's beautiful. A lot of people would have chosen to be bitter, to be the victim, or to blame their upbringing for why they are the way they are. And you chose the opposite, and you connected with your mom again. I can relate, because I have a better relationship with my father now. I chose to do that, and it took a lot of work, but I'm so proud of the, like, I'm happy that I'm not going to look back now and regret not mending my relationship with my father.
Yeah.
So I'm happy that you did the same thing with your mother and your dad.
Yeah, I'm glad you did. I feel like a lot of people just decide not to. And, like, obviously that's a personal choice. But I feel like it makes me, I can sleep at night happy knowing. So,
yeah. Is there anything last that you want to leave the listeners with? Whether it's any advice or anything else?
I feel like, just honestly, there's so much mental health conversation. I'm like, everybody, well, if you're not mentally ill, amazing. But if you are, no shame in it. We all are.
100%. Okay, so what are you currently working on that people can expect from you in the future?
So Tana and I are about to announce our tour for 2024. It's I think we're going to announce the dates on the 17th. So this should come out probably right before then, right?
Yeah. I don't know. We will. Oh, you just announced it yesterday.
I just announced the dates for the 2024 tour
yesterday. Amazing. So you guys, I'm going to I'm going to leave the link for their tour in the description bio of this episode. So if you guys, and obviously her handles and her podcast and everything else, we're going to add in. So then if you guys are curious about Brooke, you want to learn more about her, you get to check out her YouTube, you get to check out her canceled podcast, and then you get to also buy tickets in case she's in your town when she's touring, because you're touring for 4 months.
We are, yes.
Starting when?
February.
Yeah. Oh, so it's quick.
Yeah, it's like right now.
She's leaving.
Okay. I'm on my way out.
All right. So lastly, where can people find you if I didn't give enough information?
Instagram's Brooke Schofield. Everything's just Brooke Schofield.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, you guys, thank you so much for listening. And Brooke, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me. I loved it.
Okay. Bye, guys. Woohoo.